And we're always so busy right here at Natural Alternatives. I want to thank all of you for joining us for our show right here on Progressive Radio Network, and also for joining in on our many classes. We had a class called Scientific Validation of Botanical Medicine, and we had many participants from all over the country and, in fact, the world. And if you, that's something that interests you, you can take any of our classes as an archive, which means that even if you missed the live play, you can take it at any time. So if you go to naturalnurse.com and look up calendar, you'll see many of our up-and-coming classes. And then you can remember that if there's one that you missed, you can also take it. By the way, our classes grant CE units, that's continuing education units, for all different kinds of professionals, such as nurses, nurse practitioners. And so we are talking about the fact that you can certainly get any of our classes by going to naturalnurse.com calendar. And if you missed one, you can take it as an archive. And we do grant credits, CE, continuing education credits, for nurses, nurse practitioners, RDs, clinical nutritionists, acupuncturists, licensed massage therapists, and naturopathic physicians. And if you are none of those, you can take our class anytime, also your own personal knowledge and understanding. We also move people through to become RH. RH means registered herbalist, and that is a well-recognized professional certification in herbal medicine. So we also teach people how to become RH. That's a longer process, not just a one-time class. But many, many different things are available if you go to our website at naturalnurse.com. And I guess you are here because I heard you come on, Suzanne. Yes?
I am, yes.
Well, let me introduce you. Suzanne Hunton Keyes is a PharmD and is an adjunct instructor at the American College of Apothecaries and adjunct instructor for Spectrum Pharmacy Institute. Dr. Suzanne is a community pharmacist with over 20 years' experience, and her passion for root cause analysis, very important term, led her to become only the seventh PharmD to receive certification through the Institute for Functional Medicine. The training she received in functional medicine has helped Suzanne grow a large appointment-based consultation practice within her community pharmacy. So thank you so much for joining us today, Suzanne.
Well, thank you so much, Ellen, for having me on. It's an honor.
Well, functional medicine is definitely, I think, and I wonder if you agree, that should be the basis for all medical and pharmacist trainings.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it's not.
Well, it's not, but I'll tell you, I worked I've been in this field since 1964. So the fact that yourself as a pharmacist is now interested, I think, is massive progress.
Absolutely. And we are on a roll getting a larger and larger population of professionals in our career to jump on board and find out that we got to do something different.
Well, the reasons are many, because when we're talking about what you're trained in, which is functional medicine. Of course, you're also trained in conventional. We don't want to throw that out.
Sure. Absolutely.
The thing
we always say that there's a time and a place.
Is better. Yes, exactly. You really want to get people better, so you use evidence-based interventions, which is what's, just so important. Now, what made you, Suzanne, going back in time, decide to become a pharmacist in the first place?
Well, I will give you the brief summary. I was a college student at 21. I was married at 22. I gave birth to twins at 23. I was pregnant again at 24. I was divorced at 25 and then entered pharmacy school at 26 and graduated at 28. I'm originally from Dallas.
Those are some hectic years, girl.
Kind of a whirlwind, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm originally from Dallas, and I had moved to a small college community in western Oklahoma, about 5 hours away from any family, and I had three babies under three. I chose a career in the medical field mostly because I wanted to understand the physiology and what practitioners would be talking about when it came to my children's health. I explored several avenues. I chose pharmacy because I absolutely knew that I was not cut out to be to be a nurse. I could not do that job. So I chose pharmacy.
And I would say it was a good choice because other than nurses, pharmacists are the most trusted healthcare professionals.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
it's been very rewarding.
Yes, it is, because you get to interact with the public or not. You know, there's a wide range of career options within pharmacy.
Very much so. Very much so. So I just happened to do a little bit of everything, but landed in my own community pharmacy, independent community pharmacy, about 10 years ago.
And that's nice because you're right there.
Yes, I love it. Right in the hub of our community, so I can... you know, a lot of my patients walk in as patients and then they leave as family members. So I really love my environment that I've chosen to kind of land in.
Now, one thing I have found with various pharmacists that I've interacted with is this is not a quick and easy little certificate. This is a real deep study and a huge investment in time, energy, money, et cetera. And then when they get out and work in a typical pharmacy and what their daily job is really nothing more than counting pills and making labels, they find that frustrating.
You know, that is very true, and that's where it was probably several years ago, where that's all we felt like was glorified pill pushers. Our roles have changed and have morphed into more of a clinical role in the pharmacy, but it's not quite there yet. So that's part of our passion to move the movement of functional medicine forward, to just put on that clinician's hat a little bit more frequently than just standing behind the bench. You know, historically our job is to, you know, watch our staff, interact with the patients, counsel them, you know, brief counseling moments, you know, looking at drug interactions, making sure doses are correct, verifying that there's no allergies, you know, which happens a lot, unfortunately, where, you know, patients will tell me, no, I've got an allergy to penicillin. And I'm like, well, I'm handing you penicillin. So perhaps we should call the doctor. So there's a lot of very critical interventions that do take place under the traditional role of the pharmacist that I don't want to take away from. However, there are a lot of programs that are moving. In fact, I think right now it's, I think there's 12 to 15 states that actually have moved to a tech system that actually essentially removes the pharmacist from that final verification before you get your prescription. They found that technicians are actually, I believe it was 98 to 99% as accurate as a pharmacist in that final verification stage. And so some pharmacists, some of my colleagues, that makes them nervous, or I look at it like an opportunity. So if I've got a staff member that is certified and trained to do that portion, then it frees me up to actually be more of a clinician.
Right. So you're looking at that change. I know nurses also often feel that way as well, because they bring in lower licensed professionals like LPNs or even aides to replace many of their hours because that is more cost effective, but you're not getting that individual who is so highly trained.
Exactly. Exactly. We're still required, of course, to be here and be supervising, but it does get us out from behind the bench, as we say.
So that is really a wonderful sharing of what you did. You made a decision to become a healthcare professional. You actually looked at the various options and you chose farm, and it works out that it's a really fantastic job on many levels. You know, first of all, to even find a job. Also, the pay is quite good. But then you went above and beyond, because what drove you to functional medicine?
Well, you know, when I opened my store about 10 years ago, I had no inkling of what functional medicine was. I just knew that I was, over the first year, I kept seeing massive amounts of people that had the same symptomology. And at one point, I just started questioning that. And I was like, what is going on that is creating this tongue-in-cheek pandemic of chronic illness? You know, I'm in a position where I'm giving people medicine that should be making them better. And I'm historically finding that all it's doing is turning into another medication and another medication, and which would be fine if my patients were coming back to me going, I feel fabulous on these 8 medications. But I was finding out the opposite. And so just looking at these people, I started questioning what was happening. What are we all ingesting, eating, breathing, doing that's creating this? And so with that internal question, I started asking my patients, you know, how are you feeling? What's going on? You know, let's take 5 minutes and look at this medication and what you should be feeling or how you should be responding. And if you're responding that way in a positive way, that's fabulous. But I found out that a large majority of my patients were not turning the corner and finding health on the other side. So that was really what prompted me to just start digging. For the first probably 18 months, I had no idea what I was doing was labeled as functional medicine.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, it's like hidden under this veil.
Yes. Exactly. So it's been a wonderful discovery that has led me to having the capabilities to actually dig in and help people. And sometimes that involves not being on some medications or weaning off.
Well, that is really, I think, you know, when we look at the mainstream medical system, and as I said, I've been delving into this and wrote 15 books about it since 1964, it was really upsetting when I came to think, I hope I'm wrong, but it doesn't look like it, that it seems like in the U.S. the medical system seems to be programmed to focus on maximizing pharmaceutical sales rather than making people really well.
Well, Ellen, as you know it better than anyone, there's no money in getting you healthy.
Well, that seems like a shame. But, you know, I have to say, though, money runs the world, whether we like it or not. But that's one of the reasons why organic food is becoming more and more mainstream. Because I think as people find out the truth, which you focus on in your functional medicine practice, and they do have to start with basics and foundation, such as diet and lifestyle, they are voting with their dollars to move the change. Because, you know, it didn't used to be available, all organics, in every grocery store like it is now.
Right. And that is an exciting move in functional medicine, in my practice, in your practice. That's exciting. When you start seeing it become a little bit more mainstream, a little bit more available, a little bit more tolerated or expected. So, you know, people are just sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they're looking for answers. And so it's just given me the framework to kind of provide some of those answers in a community setting.
So you found functional medicine, and there weren't a lot of pharmacists in that study. So what made you make that decision? Because it's another, you know, expensive and time-consuming training to be involved with.
It is, but, you know, functional medicine, when I kept seeing all my patients come in and they're having, the only difference between their symptoms were just how severe they were. That's the only variant that I saw was, you know, everybody in my small town had Hashimoto's, or everybody had diabetes or was pre-diabetic. It didn't take long before you start kind of asking the questions. With functional medicine, though, because it's not intuitive, it does require extensive and comprehensive advanced training or education. Unfortunately, you know, viewing patients through a functional medicine lens isn't something that's intuitive, basically because, unfortunately, I'm going to say this, but we're all trained under the influence of Big Pharma. When you look at who supports our medical schools and our pharmacy schools, it is. The world is ruled by money, but it's also ruled by Big Pharma. And so that's what we're inherently trained to do, is just dispense the pills. The one thing that's really been a game changer in the world of pharmacy is that there used to be a time where we would actually make money on dispensing those pills. But in the last probably decade, that has slowly weaned to the point of seeing thousands of independent pharmacies having to close their doors because they can't survive due to, you know, Medicare and Medicaid fees taking out of our bank account due to low reimbursement, due to medications costing so much. There are a lot of us that are losing money. I lose probably about $200 a week. I'm actually paying people to come and fill their prescriptions at my pharmacy. So there, a lot of the pharmacists are jumping on board for something, anything that's different. And because of our inherent passion to help people, we are seeing a lot more move to this movement of functional medicine and root cause.
So one of the things that functional medicine, of course, involves is different testings and also different recognized levels. Like if you do tests for a nutrient, let's say, which most physicians don't really do too much of, that we have sort of different normal versus abnormal basis, because we're looking for optimum health, not just not getting a deficiency disease.
Exactly. And that's one of the points that I make and stress a lot, is normal is one step away from illness. I don't want to just be normal. I don't want to be in the normal range. I want to know what is the range, what is the optimal number that's going to allow my body to function the way that I believe God designed it to be. So normal, for instance, a TSH, I tell patients all the time when I'm suspecting there may be some sort of thyroid, subclinical or thyroid dysfunction, and they'll look me straight in the eye and go, no, my doctor said my thyroid's fine, my TSH is perfect. And then I have to go back and explain how those lab values are designed, how those ranges basically are not standard across the United States.
Yeah,
they
are
based.
A very important point with TSH is that TSH is not a thyroid hormone.
Right.
So
right.
That's something that people are often like shocked to hear. It
exactly.
Helps to regulate it because it's a stimulating hormone, but it doesn't come from the thyroid to begin with.
Exactly. And so when I'll look at somebody's labs and I'm like, oh, great. So you're all that your TSH is telling me is that your pituitary is working great.
Right.
So, but exactly. Now we need to look at how it's stimulating the thyroid gland. And so I'll look at those ranges and I'll go, you know, just looking at TSH, I think the old range, or depending on which lab you go to, is like 0.5 to 5.5. And then I'll look at my leather chair and go, my leather chair fits in that normal range, but it's not optimal. And so that's a huge range to lump somebody in. And what it's done with that bell curve is it's actually caused us to be sicker in order to fall outside of that, what they call norm.
Right. So, you know, that's wonderful that you found that, and that you found, because there's a lot of other, like if people just go, I want to be trained in, you know, let's say natural therapies or complementary therapies, there's a lot of programs around which I'm sorry to say are really a ripoff and bogus. But the functional medicine training is very comprehensive and excellent and well recognized.
Very. Very. It is extensive. It goes into the systems biology approach. You know, I often tell patients that, you know, you're not 22,867 symptoms. you are seven biological systems, and my job is to help you place those symptoms into the corresponding systems. And that gives me the ability to prioritize their dysfunction. And it also allows the patient to not be quite so overwhelmed with everything that's happening. It almost gives them a chance to kind of exhale and go, okay, we're going to break this down to where it's a little bit more manageable.
Well, you, as the information provider, I'm sure you do that, because some people then, even who do functional medicine, the person is so out of balance and they walk out of the consult with, you know, 100 supplements and stop eating every single thing that you eat. And it's rather overwhelming.
It is. And so for that very reason, I started out in my consultations making it priority that the first thing we have to do is get you feeling like you want to participate in society. Because by the time those patients come to me, they literally cannot get off the couch. And so I like to start on sleep hygiene and the HPA axis, because I describe the HPA axis as almost like your spine. It's what helps you get up in the morning. If that spine is broken, if the communication between the HPA axis is not optimal, then how in the world do we expect any other system or organ that comes off of that spine to also function properly? And so I start with, you know, sleep and HPA support. A lot of times I find that when we support the adrenals and the HPA axis, we actually see a little slight improvement in thyroid. Well, now we do that for about 6 weeks. Now I've got a person who actually feels good. I had a patient who came in, and halfway through the consult, she could see where I was going. And she looked at me and put her hand on the desk, and she goes, "You're going to make me stop drinking Dr. Pepper, aren't you?"
Uh-oh.
And I was like, and I looked at her and I folded my arms and I leaned into her and I smiled and I said, "No." I said, "Drink it up. Drink it up. You've got 6 weeks. And in that 6 weeks, I expect you to be figuring out what you're going to do in the second 6 weeks to replace the Dr. Pepper." In other words, all I need you to worry about is getting a good night's quality sleep. And let's support the HPA. And when you're feeling better, then the next phase of our journey is going to be looking at your food. But I can't ask somebody who physically is exhausted and so down, I can't look at that person and go, "All you need to do is put the Twinkie down, eat some whole foods, and go exercise." These people can't get off the couch to turn off the TV. So I think it's critical to look to meet someone where they are, to recognize what's happening, to prioritize the dysfunction, to find out where it all started. Because, you know, without knowing where it started, you don't have a place to start. And then we move into food. So you're absolutely 100% correct. You could literally lose a patient if you overwhelm them.
Right. And I'll usually move towards what I do is when someone leaves a consult with me, they actually have three action items. And and then when they come back, if they've done all three, I'll give them the next three. If they do one, then I'll give them another one. Because, you know, increments, because it really is about changing your diet, changing your lifestyle. Sometimes it's severe, like you leave your mate or your job. I mean, you know, it's really severe. And sometimes it's just, like you said, let's slow down on Dr. Pepper, like maybe you can have it once a week as a treat eventually, and it makes it less threatening to think about, oh my God, I can't live without it, because these things are addictive.
Exactly. Exactly. My sentiments.
So that's such a wonderful thing that, you know, you found out about that program, and then you're able to bring it right into the pharmacy.
Yes.
And others you have deep knowledge in, which is so important. And we'll talk about that after break, because we're going to go to a little break right here on the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I do want to remind you that our guest today is our wonderful, incredibly interesting and knowledgeable
PharmD pharmacist, Suzanne Hutton Kiz. And the best place to find her, you can find her on Instagram at the Functional PharmD, and also on Facebook.com, the Functional PharmD. And we'll have all this posted on our archive, so you can easily visit that with a link. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diet. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
And thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and we love to hear from you. Just go to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and you can send us an email, make a comment, tell us what you'd like to hear about here on the show, and basically interact in any way that you'd like. Take any of our courses by going to naturalnurse.com calendar. They're all posted there. And although they do have CE credits for health professionals, they are also open to anyone to take for your own knowledge. And we also have a class that leads to becoming an RH, that's a registered herbalist, where your knowledge about herbs is really brought to the highest level. And so we're so happy to have as our guest Suzanne Hutton Keys. She is a pharmacist, PharmD, and she integrates her pharmacy education with her knowledge of functional medicine to identify critical drug-induced nutrient deficiencies, genetic anomalies, and deficits in nutrition that impact patient health. So let's talk about that, Suzanne, and thank you so much for being our guest today. I teach in pharmacy schools, and I think every single physician should also get a full course in drug-induced nutrient deficiencies.
I couldn't agree with you more. Unfortunately, even the pharmacy schools, when I was in school, of course, that was 100 years ago, but we didn't, that wasn't a course. It was rarely mentioned. It was mentioned only maybe one or two nutrients on some extremely popular medications, but the emphasis was never on the nutrients that are being depleted. And, you know, when I look at a patient's profile now, that's the very first thing I think of. We're, as a pharmacist, we are in a perfect position to leverage our understanding of the systems and the drug mechanisms. And all we need to do now is just change that mindset and start looking at what is this medication doing to the pathway or the system that we're trying to fix. And unfortunately, sometimes we've actually figured out that it might even be propagating the exact condition that we're trying to use the medication to treat. So,
well, what I have found, because I've been studying this topic so long, is that in the older versions of the Merck manuals, for instance, they were more likely to list any known nutrient deficiency that might be caused from medication, but then it was dropped. So where do you find that information? If somebody comes in with you with this whole long list of medications, is there a favorite go-to of yours? Not only the herb-drug interactions, but the drug-nutrient depletion. Those are two different things.
Absolutely. And so for the nutrient interactions, I typically will use Natural Standard. It's just an easy go-to database and seems to be extremely accurate. There are a few apps, I guess you could say, that you can find. Some of my colleagues just starting out will use some of those. I have found, first of all, I don't trust one source. I want to make sure that I bounce that off of several reputable sites. Some of them actually are university-based. So Linus Pauling Institute out of Oregon State, I'll use that. I'll use University of Maryland has an integrative site. Harvard actually has a complementary and alternative medication portion on their website, and St. Luke's University as well.
So they have databases that discuss herb nutrient depletions.
The nutrient depletions, yes.
Oh, that's good, because that I have always found less good sources than, like you said, and these are two different things, which perhaps I'll let you describe to somebody, all our listeners, because those are two different things. One is herb-drug interaction, which everyone should be aware of before they just pop all these pills because they hear something's good for memory and they're on blood thinners.
Oh, goodness,
and nobody's monitoring that. So hopefully they share that information. Herb-drug interaction versus drug-nutrient depletion.
Right. The drug-nutrient depletion is exactly what it says. You know, a drug, by definition, a drug is going to alter or change a pathway. It's going to activate or deactivate an enzyme. It's going to increase or decrease a concentration based on a gene. There are so many considerations. Drug nutrient depletion, we're going to continue to see a rise in chronic disease until we, as pharmacists, medical professionals, everyone jumps on board and recognizes that although drugs have a place in our system, I don't want to live in a world that doesn't have an option of vancomycin when I need it, or Cipro if I have a UTI. you know, but so I'm definitely not discounting the benefits of medications. I just think that we need to start looking at some of the retro damage that is occurring when we give them, and nutrient depletion is a very large part of that. A lot of times I'll see my patients and some of the side effects they're getting. I had a one of my HRT women came in and was telling me that we have a sublingual troche that is a vitamin supplement, and it's cinnamon. And she was saying, I want to switch flavors because I think it's the cinnamon that's causing my tongue to burn. And I said, tell me a little bit more about this. And so we started talking and everything. Well, come to find out, she had just started about 3 months prior some estrogen hormone treatment. And so, you know, burning tongue can be from a depletion of B6. Well, any estrogen is going to deplete your bees. And so as soon as I started talking to her and gathering more information, I reached out to the doctor and was like, oh, hold on. So let's test this, or let's look at this, or what do you think about that? We put her on some activated B vitamins, and that burning tongue went away. And the whole time the patient had no idea. And I would venture to say that the physician that I was talking to, and it's not their job to know that, you know,
Wait a minute.
Job.
Why not? It is their job to know that.
Well, because they're not pharmacists.
Everyone should. It should be really part of standards of practice.
Well, I do. I kind of let them off the hook because it's like when I go to my broker, I don't expect him to be able to diagnose if I have a cavity or not. So I just, although those are two separate, completely separate things, and the drug depletion, you know, doctors don't even get, well, at least when I was in school, they don't even get a course. I think they get one pharmacy course in med school. And at the time, they were getting nothing in nutrition. And so when you're not trained in it and you rely heavily on another profession, I kind of ease the reins on their responsibility and encourage.
Okay. We'll allow you to do that. And we are speaking to our guest, Suzanne Keyes. She is a PharmD. And she's saying that the pharmacist should be taking responsibility of looking at what nutrients might be depleted by someone taking a pharmaceutical. It's so important because, like you brought up, even if somebody's very deficient in B vitamins, that can cause things like depression. But instead of just getting the right foods that are higher in B vitamins and a good activated B supplement, they're getting an antidepressive med.
Right. Which is funny. That's actually leads me into something that I kind of put together a couple of years ago when I was speaking at a conference. And for instance, you know, we've got the average 2-year-old has received 3 courses of broad spectrum antibiotics by the time that they're 2. That destroys the gut microbiome. It wipes out the B vitamins. The lack of that can actually precipitate things like restlessness, anxiety, you know, depression, ADD, you know, but then they become 6 years old, and then we start seeing some of these symptoms. So then we put them on another medication that depletes magnesium. Then they're not sleeping. Then we put them on another medication to help them sleep, which is also depleting or displacing iodine. Now they're 12, and we're seeing a massive overload of these adolescents that are on antidepressants. And so we give them an SSRI. Well, that happens to deplete or displace iodine. And we know that iodine is key for thyroid production and conversion. And what's one of the components or hallmark traits of hypothyroidism? Depression. So we're actually giving them an antidepressant that could possibly be making it worse. You know, by the time that these adolescents are 19, I think the studies showed that they've been on 19 courses of antibiotics. So it's no wonder that the main drug for adults 20 to 59 are antidepressants. When
that is
all
really
we have to do is dig a little deeper and look at inflammation, look at their nutrient depletion, look at, you know, what else is going on that could be causing this. It's not always a lack of Prozac.
What about when we're talking about that, you know, you're talking about an age group that you're interacting with, you know, with your kids and with your patients, but I know you also must have a pretty large geriatric population, and we're talking about polypharmacy is the norm in the geriatric population. And I will say my parents in their 90s have never taken any medication.
Oh, that's wonderful. Absolutely.
And my children in their 40s never have either. Not that they haven't gotten ill, not that I wouldn't give them a medication if we can't deal with balancing through food and supplements and herbal medicines. But I think this thinking the norm is that 60 and 70-year-old people should normally be on 5 to 10 meds every day is really off base.
It's funny that you said five because the statistics show that a very large proportion of 60 and above and probably starting in their 40s just think it is absolutely normal to get the pill for the ill and no less than five medications. There's a large, large section of the population that's an everyday process.
Absolutely. But that's how they trust their doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the doctor is doing, and he trusts, or she, trusts that process as well because it's standard of practice, and nobody's waking up like you did, like, whoa. So this same person is coming back, now they took one thing, they have an upset stomach, now they're taking something for their upset stomach, now they have headaches, now they have dry skin. You know, each of those then builds the medication picture.
Absolutely.
And what are you
a lot of different
especially once you start to help people reverse that?
I'm sorry, say that again?
So what happens when people realize that and start working with you and you're taking them down those notches?
Well, first of all, they're ecstatic because they're not taking a large pill. Let me make one thing clear. I'm not swapping supplements for, you know, if they're on 17 medications, I'm certainly not going to replace those with 17 supplements. It's very important.
Absolutely not. Right.
Yeah. I try to be very cognizant of compliance. I have what I call a fabulous five that I feel like despite your level of whole food nutrition, that we're still not going to get that supplement, that nutrient in the levels that you need it from our food. So I try to keep my supplements list down to five unless we've got five or under, unless we've got some specific things that need to be addressed. But people are for the most part, it's been a slow progress. You know, people still want to use their copays. They still want to use their insurance. They still want to only pay $5. And so then they translate that to the supplements, and they look at those $50 supplements or those $30 supplements and go, just forget it. I'll just take the pill because I can get it for $5.
Yeah.
So
that price is not the real price of it. That's with the insurance payment, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It takes a level of discernment to figure out in my practice who is here for the pill and then who here is really wanting to change their life.
That's such an important point, Suzanne, because in all complementary and holistic therapeutics, really, you're acting as a guide and a teacher. The only one you can make changes for is yourself and model that change. But if the client doesn't even want to, then really they just should just go ahead and stay on their meds, and that's it.
And that's exactly our outlook. And so I'll go ahead and fill them for you, absolutely. But we'll probably have some pointed questions along our journey together. And eventually if I can give the right amount of information and the right directed information, eventually those patients will come around. But some of them don't, and I get it. I've spent, 15 years there in that place thinking that everything was fine and this is just a part of aging. But there are some that want to buck the system and don't want to live that way. And so that's where most of my time is spent.
Well, wonderful, wonderful resource you are for your community. We're going to take another little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. so you can hear more about other shows brought to you by our fabulous station, Progressive Radio Network. And our guest today is pharmacist Suzanne Hotten-Keyes, and we'll be right back with more information in just a few. You're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. For joining us today, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. Visit us at naturalnurse.com. Click on calendar to find out about all the classes and workshops that are coming up, both online and in person. And we love to hear from you. Today, our guest is pharmacist Suzanne Hotten-Keyes, and she, you can find her on Facebook.com at the Functional Pharm D. So, Suzanne, you were telling us some fantastic, really great information. And one of the things you mentioned that I'd like to hear more about, I think you called it the Fabulous Five, and those are nutrients that you find, you know, almost everyone may need, even if they're eating a fairly healthy diet.
Yes. Part of my five is... Actually, one of them is kind of, I go back and forth. I leave that space open for a specialized supplement or nutrient that we need. But the core of it is omegas. I think a good omega-3 balanced omega is critical for inflammation, heart health, brain health. And honestly, there's so many misconceptions around which fish, what type, sustainable, non, wild caught, farm, and people don't know a lot of times what they're getting. And so I just think even if you were eating fish, you know, three times a week, the majority of the public are eating things like tilapia and thinking it's healthy. So I just always put somebody on an omega. Magnesium, you know, our soil used to be magnesium rich, you know, 50 years ago even, and it's nothing like that now. So even fashioning your diet around magnesium-rich foods, because we're all depleted, you know, and magnesium affects over 300 enzymatic functions in the body, I think we can all use a healthy amount of magnesium. Probiotics, I'm on the fence with being a consistent, only because there are certain conditions that a probiotic could make worse. So that's a little touchy one, but for the most part, digestive enzymes, probiotics, can be leveraged for better health. I love berberine. That's one of my go-tos. At first, I didn't typically put a lot of people on it just because I kind of was a little leery and of the liver enzymes and everything. But, you know, and it's not a question of do you have insulin resistance at this point after this many years. It's a matter of how bad is it and how far progressed is it. So because we live in this environment, because we are subject to the standard American diet, I believe fervently that we all have insulin resistance. And so a little berberine here and there wouldn't hurt to get that sugar down. I think I covered those. I think I got all five of those, I think. So I'll have to go back and look.
Those are really wonderful suggestions. Let me go a little bit deeper in terms of the forms of some of these things. For instance, magnesium. It's available in so many different forms. Is there any one form that you prefer or think might work better?
So the most bioavailable that I found in evidence is the magnesium glycinate or bisglycinate. So I do recommend a lot of the glycinate form. You're correct. There's a lot of people, unfortunately, think that the MAGOX is sufficient to increase their levels. And I always try to point out that it's not necessarily the magnesium that causes, you know, loose stools. It's the amount of unabsorbed magnesium that causes that. So unless we've got things like intestinal permeability, leaky gut, SIBO, you know, of course anything will cause you to have loose stools at that point. But So we don't even carry the oxide and the some of the other forms, that the citrate. We don't carry any of those forms. So we carry basically threonate, just simply because it's the most studied, that crosses the blood-brain barrier for neurological issues. We carry taurate because I was listening to one of your ads about taurine. I love taurine. They have studied that, of course, because it's one of the highest components in cardiac health. And so we give the magnesium taurate for our cardiac patients. Let's see, threonate, glycinate, the taurate. I think that's the three main ones that I carry. But just as a general rule, I'll always start out with a glycinate unless I have any other reason to move from that.
Well, I totally agree, and that's what I personally take, and really find that it gets the best absorption without being, you know, a strong laxative. It might cause
sure.
a little bit of, let's say, increased bowel movements, which usually is a good thing, while
Absolutely.
Other forms, you see, it might be really too strongly laxative. But I think that's a wonderful form, and definitely the one that I would most often suggest. And
we talk about poop all the time here, so glad you mentioned that.
That's a good thing. People don't realize, how about the fact that many people are actually told by their doctor that if they have one bowel movement a week, fine, that's what's normal for them. How do you feel about that statement?
Oh, my goodness. Well, 25 years ago when I was in pharmacy school, we were taught that, you know, if somebody comes to you and is like, I have a bowel movement every 3 days and that's the way it's always been, you know, that's fine, that's normal for them. Well, I almost came unglued, you know, last year when I was getting, this will show my age, getting ready for our colonoscopies. And I was speaking to the doctor on the phone prior to getting our prescription ready for the procedure. And, you know, I said something about, my husband's going to kill me, but he knows I do this. I was like, you know, sometimes he doesn't have a bowel movement for like 3 days. And I said, so I would say he's got a bout of constipation. That nurse went, oh no, girl, that's totally fine. Every two or three days, that's fine. And I'm sitting there going, I'm not going to get into this right now, but, you know, that's our body's way to detoxify. That's where our toxic estrogen metabolites are, you know, and the longer that bowel movement just sits there, it just recirculates. And there's another opportunity for all those toxins and those lethal estrogen metabolites to be reabsorbed. And so there was a time where I thought it was okay and normal, but then I kind of switched sides and was like, you know, God designed us to be like a dog, eat and poop, eat and then expel it. So it's very shocking to a lot of patients when I look at them and go, no, I at least want you to have about one bowel movement a day, and they are just shocked.
Yeah, but that is shocking that people are shocked. It's just an amazing phenomenon. So we're coming to the end of our time together, Suzanne. Can you, you know, end with just something you'd like to share and how people can find you if they'd like to, you know, tap your knowledge?
Absolutely. So we, our store, we've got our landline at our pharmacy is 580-225-5273, and I encourage patients and your listeners that if they call, sometimes I'm not available, but my staff, which is very nice, is trained highly in functional medicine, so they not only know their limitations and know when to come to get me, but they can answer a lot of the inquiries that we have on a daily basis. They can handle that, so don't be afraid that you don't get me. We are on Facebook under Keys Compounding and 180 Wellness. That's our pharmacy number, our pharmacy store. I'm also on, my personal account is on Facebook. I will say I'm a little too busy to check it constantly. So, or you can reach out to me on Instagram where, as you said, it's hashtag the Functional Farm D. And I do a lot of educational courses. We're actually in the middle of completing a 30-hour continuing education course based on functional medicine designed by pharmacists, the three of us, my two colleagues and myself, for pharmacists. And so we're hoping to launch that this fall. It will have a nationwide launch Q1 of 21. So be looking for some posts about that. I think those are all the ways that we've got a couple of webinars that you can view online and see our statements and our mission on functional medicine. So just kind of Google and call us if you have any questions.
Well, thank you so much for that, and thank you for being such a knowledgeable guest and a real leader in the field. And hopefully it will be just become, you know, conventional pharmacy, because it is the right way to go, and it is evidence-based, and it leads to people feeling better, which is the most important thing. That's why we all got into this field in the first place. So thank
right.
you so much, listeners,
more.
For joining us today, and thanking our guest, Suzanne Keyes. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.